All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Culkin meeting the 12th floor of the Capitol today for our administrative portion of our regular scheduled commission meeting. It is Wednesday, October 22nd, approximately 10:40. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Crispin?
No opening comments.
Commissioner Fedorchuk?
No.
Okay, there are several items on consent. I would move passage of the items on consent.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Daryl. Okay, let's go right to discussion. The first one is temporary engineering position public utilities. We've had some general discussion about this, but I thought it was appropriate to put it on for discussion in our meeting with potentially a motion actually later on down in discussion. But the thought process, I guess, that I kicked around before was that we go out now and hire Daryl will have to help me out here, that a temporary term position between now and the end of the biennium for an additional person in public utilities to do work with basically backing up Drury Lane on some of the transmission line issues, maybe even helping out Pat with some of our damage prevention, doing a variety of things. But the main focus was some of the transmission issues. And so we started out with that discussion, and then it kind of morphed into, well, maybe we should amend the budget request to add this into our budget. So what Daryl's prepared what's the correct term, Daryl? The term position?
It's a temporary part-time position.
Okay, so we have that to talk about, and then Josh has prepared a change to our budget request so we could put this position in our 2015-17 budget. So the thought process would be we could hire someone for this period until the end of the budget cycle, and then if the legislature so grants us, then we could open that job position up, and then anyone could apply for it. Not guaranteed that the person that may get the first job would get the second job. It doesn't work that way. And so I hadn't really formally talked to my colleagues about this, so I wanted to see if there's any questions and go from there, I guess.
Well, I know we have some backup as far as the temporary position, and so I get that. I'm kind of on board with that. I'm not so totally convinced yet on applying for another permanent FTE. We have a number of spots that we are already asking for and have prioritized them. I don't know where this would be on the priority list, and I don't know at what point we start diminishing our credibility and making our case for new employees, you know, when we go from where we're at now and add too many in one session. I'm concerned about that we lose some of our initial priorities.
The only thought I would have, Randy, is I thought of that priority question as well, and I would say this would be our bottom priority of all the ones that we submitted, and we'd put this in as the lowest one just because if it had been a bigger priority, we would have probably thought of it earlier. And it wasn't quite honestly that for me when all those events kind of collided with the realization Southwest Power Pool is coming in, looking at the workload coming in for more transmission lines. So that's where I would say if we do this, it would be the lowest priority of the 12 that we submitted.
I'm interested in staff comment on that. You know, Pat and Mike and Jerry, what are your thoughts on how urgent this is?
I could talk a little bit. There is somebody for this temporary position that I think is more than promising to come in and hit the ground running. And I've worked with this guy through MISO stuff and things like that. He's retired from Basin. And I think he can really help us out. He's interested in just a part-time type thing and to continue to follow the SPP and the MISO development. And he's familiar with both SPP and MISO. So I think bringing him in, if we can, to help out right now, you know, we're going to have a crunch coming in with Basin joining. And then we become a member of the Regional State Committee that in SPP. And And so I think this is could be a good solution for our increased workload there. And
is that crunch temporary, Jerry? Do you anticipate that's a no? But do you anticipate the crunch will be a temporary crunch and not like a permanent increase in workload?
Well, as I look forward at the thing, I think the main thing is we need to learn to understand SPP the way that we do MISO now.
Right.
And that work with SPP is going to continue, but we won't have the same degree in SPP that we have in MISO because we don't regulate rates for Basin Electric or WAPA. And them moving in there causes more issues with facilities and stuff like that, with the growth in the Bakken and things that go on with having a second RTO really controlling the Bakken area and the seams with Otter Tail and MDU. I expect there to be continued workload there. It'll be more trying to learn the lay of the land, so to speak. And then as we go forward, it will probably taper a little bit. We'll see what it ends up being.
Mm-hmm. What about your other workload?
For me?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm always busy. I mean, I think that really this right here is our critical issue at the moment. I think I'm, have always kind of been able to keep up with whatever I have to do.
Right.
So
is it? Is the conclusion I can make from your comments that you think it would be good to do the temporary thing and see how this evolves and at some point in the future make a more informed decision on a permanent full-time second person doing this type of work?
It would seem that way if it works. You guys know more about what you want to ask for with budgeting and so forth up there with the legislature. We have asked for a few PUD positions and gotten them. The temporary is probably enough to get us through. Long term, I don't really know.
Mm-hmm. What about you guys, Pat and Mike?
I think Jerry said it pretty well. I'm looking at it maybe a little beyond what Jerry's talked about. It's just continuity in the program. I've said it before, and I keep saying it, that South Dakota has the smallest public utility division staff next to North Dakota, and they have around 15 equivalent FTEs. I think that we run pretty bare bones here.
Is that an apples to apples comparison? I've never
that's
really
why I
known
said equivalent. I mean, you can make some judgments. You can go look out there and look at their authority and how many FTEs they have. And yeah, is it a perfect? Can I say those 15 sir do exactly what we do? No, but in looking at that, I'm telling you that I think about 15 full-time equivalent employees in South Dakota do the same kinds of things that we do with six or seven. And I think you can get away with that right now because you have seasoned employees and that have a lot of understanding about, in Jerry's case, MISO and transmission and siting and all the things that he does. You're going to want to have somebody on board to start gathering up all that institutional knowledge before Jerry walks out the door. And it will take more than one newbie to handle what he's doing. And so I think this is a perfect way, actually. I agree with Brian, a perfect way to go about it. Put this in the queue in case we get down the road with this temporary employee and go, oh, my goodness, we need a full-time employee and we don't have anything in the queue. Let's put it in the queue.
In the budget.
In the budget. Put it in the queue so that at least we have a placeholder in the event we need it. I can't, like Jerry said, I can't make a judgment as to what priority you put in them, put it at, because I don't know what all the other requests are in the rest of the division. So,
I don't know if you're looking for somebody that is dedicated to this specific topic or the specific job description, but I was thinking, you know, in pipeline safety, PHMSA is looking for engineers to be involved in pipeline safety throughout the states, and it's actually one of, we get more points if we have an engineer on board, and if we could find an engineer that would also be interested in pipeline safety, that would take on some of the pipeline safety work, and do this as well. If they didn't have enough to do with just this, they could do some of that other pipeline safety work.
Well, we've noticed some challenges with splitting staff and not having enough people over there already. I thought of that right away. But the June of 2015 would be the end of this temp position, correct? And so the Southwest Power Pool stuff, Jerry, would hardly be getting going by June of 2015.
Yeah, and this temporary position here, I didn't think that it would just be through this biennium. I thought it would continue on as long as you can keep this guy, really. I mean,
and the budget would support it. That's the challenge. Yeah. Is that we have the money for between now and June of 15, but there's no guarantees of July of 15 on.
I'll tell you, the kind of position that you're talking about here is going to be really hard to find. And
which position are you talking about, the temporary or the permanent?
The SPP and MISO and looking for an electrical engineer. OMS has been looking for an electrical engineer for a long time.
But that's the key point, though, Jerry, is someday down the road, we have the workload now, but I think that someday the folks at the table will move on to something different. And if we don't have somebody that's able to help out now and ready to prep in there, we could have a vacancy of a year of having no one in there. These are hard positions to get.
Yep. And but that's what makes this temporary thing here, I think, so fortunate that we're able to find if this works out with this guy in this spot.
How about if I throw this out as an idea? Unless Commissioner Fedorchak knows exactly where she's at and Randy knows, maybe we have a motion ready to go to approve this for the budget, but if you two want more time, we could rally the troops again and let everybody digest this. I don't know. That's just an alternative, unless.
Well, I'm frustrated that this wasn't part of the conversation 4 months ago. Why weren't we talking about this?
Well, I'll take that responsibility. When I looked at all the priorities of things, I got focused on all the other things, and it wasn't until I had a meeting with Southwest Power Pool about, I don't know, 2 months ago, and started looking at the time commitments that are going to be required to, when we become a member of their regional state committee, all the seams issues that are coming from Basin, from MDU, whether they join Southwest Pool or not, there's a lot of work coming. And so I think that's just looking at all the workload coming, it wasn't until I had the meeting with Southwest Power Pool that really hit my radar screen.
Can I divide your question into two parts? On the temporary one, that we would be certain would go, assuming that we get someone and that they stay, we would have money for through next June.
Right.
Do we have hiring someone and not having a spot for him or her to work? It doesn't do any good either. Do we have a spot
for them? Well, absolutely. We've got those two work positions outside where Bruce sat at. I don't think the space is an issue.
Okay. You know, this SPP thing, and that is a big change and requires real expertise. And so I am fine at this point with that. I would like to digest the seeking the permanent position.
Okay.
And so if you wanted to move on with that, then we could focus our discussion whenever we take it up again on just the additional FTE.
Okay. What's the timing on the FTE? Like, how long do we have to make that?
I talked to Pam Sharp about this, and she said the sooner the better.
They're going to finalize our budget.
This week, right?
They will do it without this, which means then you take it to the legislature directly.
Right.
She basically gave us this week. She said, Brian, if you can get me something this week, we'll put it in the queue. Other than that, we've got to finalize your budget.
I just got an IM for a budget analyst before I came here asking.
Where are we
status.
At?
Yeah. So I think they are ready to move on.
And what are the options after, in between sessions, for doing this?
Well, I think if we don't get it in our budget, then we could go down and shop it to a legislator.
No, after session. Say we go the temporary route.
Emergency commission.
I have a thought.
Is that what it is? Go to the emergency commission and request an FTE.
If you get money for the FTE and not hire it right away, this temporary can be using that money.
Sure.
Into next biennium. And so then you don't need to worry about running out of money for your temporary at the end of the biennium. That's just a thought.
I'm not following that, Jerry.
Well,
you'll have budget appropriations.
You'll have money to pay the temporary guy with if we can keep him longer than the biennium. Yeah.
And it's approved.
A lot of ifs.
And what's the logistics of keeping a temporary employee? I mean, what kind of approval do we need for that? Nothing? Like, could we do a temporary employee through the next entire biennium? Is that allowed?
Sure it is. We just have to have the budget for it. That's how we had Jen with us on board.
Right.
It's just our internal decision if we can afford the resources for
right.
it.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Are you okay with the temp?
Yes, I'm fine with the
okay,
temp.
Okay, so Daryl, can you get that temp out there on the street? And then I'll put to scheduling another discussion with the three of us for the...
Just a question. You know, you have a copy of the vacancy announcement. Are we okay with how that's written?
I thought that was fine, Daryl.
Because we are, and again, it reflects a specific qualifications, which, again, I think it's good. I think it's well written. It's not necessarily has to be, you know, with the temporary, it doesn't have to be as competitive as if we look at a new position, new FTE.
Sure.
So I think we're okay with that. I know there's some questions raised. Should this be more competitive? But, you know,
we know what we're looking for, and that's what we need to put in the announcement.
It needs to be. I mean, if this is something specific, then we're fine with that.
Okay. Randy?
Do we need a motion or to vote on that? Or is
not
that
for those. We usually just
temporary. Just
in the goal. All three of us agree we don't need it. Just for the budget, we'd have to have a motion. So.
Okay,
so that's the first item discussed. The second one we took care of. Mr. Lean, you've got procedures for revising Maricourt and Sunflower wind turbine site plans.
That's on just to make sure that everybody's happy with what I was wanting to do with these two cases.
Can you educate me again what we talked about in my office? I can't remember all the details.
Sure. What we've got is the Maricourt project. If you recall, we issued them a site certificate a couple of years ago.
We issued them what?
A site certificate for the project a couple of years ago. If you remember, that is the one that NSP backed out of and left an Exco looking for a new buyer. And so they've got that project redone, and we issued them a permit for 1.5 megawatt GE turbines, and they're not going to be able to get those. And so they want to revise the layout to accommodate a different turbine. I believe it was a 2.0 megawatt Vista, if I remember right. But that means there's a few less turbine spots. and a little different spacing between them. So we'd have a revised turbine layout. The other one was the Sunflower Project. Remember AmeriCorps was down in the Ashley area? And so the Sunflower Project is over here in Morton County. For that one, we issued them a permit already, and we gave them an option of two different wind turbines to use, and now they want a third option. So they have a slightly revised layout if they pick their third option. And that would give them the ability to use this third turbine. It's both cases. It's a case of the layout changes slightly. And so what we've done before with these kind of things is had a notice of opportunity for hearing and went forward that way with an amended permit to reflect the changes in the new order. Approving their revised layouts. And so that's what I was wanting to do again this time. If you recall, we just did that for the one down
You're
by
Hettinger.
Her. And we almost went to hearing on that one. And then it turned around and we ended up without going to hearing, but it's the same process we used there.
We had an informal though, right, for
we
that one?
We did have an informal, and we would do that at some point here too.
Okay.
Well, basically I told Jerry when him and I talked about it, I was okay with that idea of putting notice opportunity for hearing as long as there wasn't any turbines that had changed outside the initial project footprint, as long as there wasn't any cultural things that hadn't been studied before. So that's but of course that takes all three of us, I thought, that
yeah,
should talk about it.
And there would be some additional cultural studies that they have to do, but it would all stay within the same footprint.
Well, you know, I got to say, you know, when something like this happens, sometimes I view it differently than when it just becomes the routine. And it seems to me these wind development projects are developing a pattern of coming in here, and we go out and have a public hearing, and people show up to it, and we show them maps, and it might show how they want to build it. It might show two or three options of how they want to build it. But it's always a race to get our approval because they wanted to start dirt work a month ago already, and then a year or two down the line, they haven't done a darn thing, and the plan completely changes, and we throw out a little notice in the legals of some county newspaper. And those people are going to just think, it's the same thing. We already did that. And I don't know when these people are going to start figuring out what it is they want to do before they do their applications. And I'm really frustrated with this becoming just the norm that we have hearings on one thing and then build another.
I think the choice is that, in this case, it's basically either go back down there and do another hearing, or we do the notice of hearing. And if one commissioner wants a hearing, we'll go do the hearings. But if that's kind of the way the protocol we follow. But it's a choice of either do a hearing or do a notice of opportunity for hearing are the two choices that are out there.
Well, I'm trying to think of this from the standpoint of the public. So, because I share some of Randy's concerns. But if the public comes to the hearings, how is it presented to them, the maps in terms of the turbine locations? Are we clear enough that these are subject to change? And is that understood, that we're kind of approving this footprint and some proposed locations of the turbines? But those things, I know we have that in our order, that these are subject to change. But is that emphasized enough? Because if it isn't, then we should go and have another public hearing so people can see where the turbines are going to be. But there seems to be no end to that process because, you know, it would be great if they could define that from the front end on you know, a very certain basis. But, you know, that's the reality of business. Things change, and you have to be somewhat adaptable to working with the companies and allowing them the flexibility to build the best project. And so I don't know. How do we present this at those hearings, Jerry? Can you remind me?
We have a set of turbine locations when it goes into the hearing. And at that point, that's where they're expected to go. And so later on, after they change that, you know, you expect a little bit of shift here and there. Just once you get into the construction mode, you'll find reasons that something has to move a little bit or something. But I think the landowners are thinking that these are going to be the locations.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not really subject to change. But yet, other than for minor little movements like that, but yet there needs to be a way to change them when the companies want to change things. Mm-hmm. The projects are kind of fluid as they go through, and we've tried to accommodate them getting a permit and still meeting their timetables to, you know, they've got to have banks and stuff like that all coming online with money for these things, and they've got to deal with the turbine manufacturers to make sure that they can get the turbines delivered. And then there's a negotiation process on price for turbines and stuff like that. And the whole thing gets complicated on trying to make one of these projects go, just because there's so much money involved. Mm-hmm. and so many pieces trying to put it together.
And I suppose they can't do some of those things without a permit.
And
so it's like a chicken and egg situation.
I think that that we have been instrumental in the amount of wind generation that we've been able to secure in the state so far, with our flexibility and our ability to site the projects and move them quickly and be flexible to deal with changes when they come in afterwards. These guys have a ton of money on the line.
Well, we do have to be flexible, but we also, the public needs to know what's going on and have input in, because they're living with these. So what do the companies have to do with the landowners in terms of notification directly? And, on changes.
And that's a tough one too, because the companies, when they're trying to nail down turbine locations, they don't want to promise landowners turbines until they know for sure that they're going to get a turbine, because then the landowners get very upset because they thought they were getting a turbine and then something changes and they mm-hmm. don't. So it's a fine line to walk between noticing the turbine layout for the hearing and changes that occur afterwards, and then people that thought they were going to get turbines don't get them. Also on the flip side of it, neighbors that now all of a sudden they got a turbine a lot closer than they thought they were going to have.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that I can think to do is to notice the changes. If we wanted to have a requirement that they go out and present the changes to the people in the project area, there's where we run into the balance of, are the changes permanent? Are they really going to go this way, or are you just going to make somebody mad promising them a turban and then they don't get it? I think it's a good thing to err on the side of giving them a turban layout before the hearing, and then afterwards, if it changes, to have a notice process. And if we were to do anything, we could have some kind of rules or something that govern that notice process.
And what's the downside of having another hearing?
Money and scheduling, delay.
You know, but that's... You know, there are a lot of these, and maybe the companies would be a little more conservative in finalizing their plans and being a little further down the road before having the first hearing if they knew that they had to, it was going to, you know, there was a process for these kind of changes that required some additional public opportunities for comment, review, and notice.
That's a point. You know, another possibility would be to require that they serve the changes on everybody in the project area.
Directly.
Yeah. Other than us just putting a notice in the paper.
Well, if I could, though, for just my edification, though, I think I heard from Commissioner Crispin he wants a hearing. And so, unless I heard that wrong. And the practice of the commission, and I fully support it, has been if you've got one commissioner that wants a hearing, let's go do the hearing. That's kind
of... Yeah, but there might be some other opportunities. I think this is a good discussion because it's good to know what other avenues we might have to accomplish that.
If you've got one person that wants a hearing,
for sure.
I think we should go do the hearing because I might be the one sometime.
And I'm not opposed to that. I just am curious what other options sure. we have for getting the public notice.
I agree with that too, but I think that we should do them on case-by-case basis, and if any of the commissioners have a look at the project and think, yeah, we need a hearing on this one, then do it. But to have hearings on every little thing, I got a feeling we're going to end up sitting down there with nobody showing up on some of these. And
well, and that's an important point. And I don't know what the changes on these two particular ones are, but you know, if you get a wind farm with 50 or 75 turbines and now they want to move one of them 10 feet over on the hill because they had it a little wrong on the map, you know, that's certainly doesn't merit another hearing. But if they're completely redoing it where, you know, maybe people that were adamant supporters no longer are, and maybe now there's new opposition to it because things have, they're way taller and now certain people have to put up with them that would have found them unnoticeable before. I just have no idea what these changes are, and you know, I already said my frustration with the whole concept of poor planning, but I guess it depends on the significance of the changes, and I'm not familiar with how significant each of these are.
One thing to add is, like in the case of the Sunflower, we approved two layouts for that, so we don't know which layout they will choose. And so the people had to come and talk about the two layouts in the hearing as if either one would work. But they didn't know who was going to get the turbines and stuff like that when we were at the hearing. They knew who might get them, but they didn't know for sure where stuff was going.
Well, I kind of like the concept of requiring them to directly notify all the people within the project area, and then us doing the notice of opportunity for a hearing, so we know everybody has been informed about the changes, and we have an opportunity for them to step forward if they want a hearing, and we can, you know, get a sense of how much concern the changes present.
When these have been done in the past, when we're having a hearing on one of these, is it a now we're getting a third option, or when we would approve that motion, would you now have this option and the first two are gone?
In the Sunflower case, they're asking for a third option. We've never done that before. In the previous case, the old option was gone. When we gave them the new layout, it was, this is where they're going. You're not getting another option. You're changing your plan. And so with the Sunflower case, they have two options now. This would give them a third option.
And they might choose any one of the three.
Yes. And I did call him back up to make sure that's what he was asking for. Mm-hmm. And that is what they're asking for.
And for Maricourt?
For Maricourt, they have a change. The old stuff is off the table.
And so all the locations are new?
The
second option.
In Maricourt, we approved a layout, and it was for a 1.5 mm-hmm. megawatt GE turbine. They can't get that turbine. They have another alternate turbine that they want to use, and so they have a revised layout with a different turbine.
Mm-hmm.
So the first option isn't on the table anymore.
Mm-hmm.
When the initial approvals, do we put a timeline in there, or do they have
4 years?
An approval.
The permit's good for 4 years, but there's a clause in the statute that says that they can come back and certify to the commission that nothing's changed, and the permit can be extended.
So, I guess the long and short of it is we'll have to. I'll go back to where I started at. For me, I remember doing both of these hearings. The project footprint is not changed. You're just changing the configuration inside it. I'm okay to do a hearing. I don't know about the idea of certifying. I think we either do a hearing or we don't do a hearing. And whether we do a hearing or do an informal, my questions will be the same. So I just really don't let you guys, if you need more time, well, I can take more time. But really, I think the sooner we make a decision, the better. Either we get the informal noticed or we notice the hearing. I mean, I think we're talking a difference here of 2 weeks.
Yeah,
whether we do one way or the other.
To having a notice on the sixth agenda.
And I asked Jerry to put it on today because if we ended up going to a hearing, I would have him get the dates locked in and we'd have a special meeting, get the clock rolling. But to me, it's a couple weeks. We make a decision, we execute it, and then we go either do the hearing or we don't. But the clock's got to run either way. The sooner we get the clock going, the better, in my opinion.
What we could do is I could tell them we don't have it in the rules or anything, but I think that I could tell them that we would like the site plan provided to all of the people in the project area. I don't know if mail is a way to do that, along with a copy of the hearing notice.
Opportunity for hearing notice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I personally think that is important to notify the folks who are in the project area directly by the company. So they may or may not see the notice of opportunity for a hearing, and I would guess that they won't see that. So then they'll be kind of taken off guard.
Randy, what do you think?
If we're going to decide today, I'd want a hearing. If we wait 2 weeks till our next meeting, it could even be a special meeting, I would review these and see once if, in my mind, they're major and significant changes, and maybe I'd feel otherwise. But I guess without having looked at them, I would think that there should be a hearing. And I'm just gonna throw this out. It doesn't have really so much to do with whether there's a hearing or not. But even if we have another hearing, this process is still a concern to me because, people come out for a hearing, and then when it just goes on and on, it gets to be, I think, in the minds of a lot of the public as one of those things where they're going to do what they want to do, and they're going to keep pounding away until they get their way. And so they have a hearing, and that change, they have another one, and if we don't give in, they'll just keep having them until we do. And so this process of hurrying to get these approved and then not building them is really frustrating me. But
one thing I could mention is I think that there are states that issue a permit for a project area, and then they clear that whole area, and then the layout is up to the company afterwards.
Say that again, Jared.
I'm not suggesting that's how we go, but...
What do other states do? I missed that.
Huh?
Say that again, please.
I think there are other states that would issue a permit for the project area and then just let them build it where they want in there.
Mm.
So you're just permitting the project area.
There's some that would say our law gives them the flexibility to do that now. Right, Alana? So, well, let's go like this then. How about our next meeting? What is that, November?
November 6th.
Why don't, Jerry, you talk to the two companies and see if you can lock in a hearing date for both these wind farms, so two different hearings. In the meantime, Commissioner Christman can review the two wind farms, and Commissioner Fedorchuk can as well, and then have us two motions ready to go for the next meeting. One is to set two formal hearing dates, and one is to do informals. And if you want to put that caveat in there that Commissioner Fedorchuk said for the informal part of it, I'm okay with that. I mean, does that sound like a path forward?
I think you've nailed it.
So let's just be ready to go for both things. So November 6th, we get the clock rolling. And if all this comes together before then we could have a special meeting. If Randy looks at him and says, you know what, I'm okay with an informal, then he'll let you know and we'll go forward. We could do a special meeting on that. If you look at him and say, I absolutely want a formal hearing before then let's do the same thing. Let's have a special meeting and get that clock rolling.
So. Could we not get the clock rolling today with the notice of opportunity for a hearing? At which point Randy could still decide he wants a hearing?
I guess I would just let it puddle a little bit before we do that, just because it seems I don't like just doing that quick. Because after my colleague's concerned, I don't want to do extra paperwork, knowing that an extra week or so I don't think is going to make that big a difference.
Okay, so if we are having hearings, I'm to find dates for them, suggested dates. And we'll make the decision.
And I could even put that on scheduling for some dates for some hearings today. I guess my sense is we're going to end up having some hearings on these things too. So, and maybe I'll want to have a hearing too after I look at these again. When we get all this ambiguity around these cases, and I'm looking at my attorney here, and we get all these questions that come from commissioners, probably the best thing to do is to go back out and hold a hearing, have a very clean record. Isn't that the advice you give me, Alana?
Yes. Yes.
Right. That's exactly what I was thinking when I was going through all this. So, okay. Alrighty then. The next one, another easy one here. We'll hold the FTE one. They've already talked about that. The CP Rail complaint, I know all three of us are aware of this. Alana and I visited a little bit when I first, because my first hear of this, quite honestly, was when I saw the reporting of it. And so I guess it would have been nice if the city of Enderlin would have notified us on their concern about the block crossing, and we'd have done what we normally do, and Commissioner Fedorchuk and Daryl have worked through different crossing issues. But that being said, they didn't, and now the CP is litigating against the city of Enderlin. And my concern right away was that depending how this turns out, I asked Alana, could this put our law in place about whether we have authority to regulate the 10 minutes of trains cannot block the tracks. So I asked Alana about that and thought maybe we have a role in this because maybe we cite in the side of Enderlin, maybe there's something different about what they've passed in their ordinance in our 49 law. But I guess that's where I thought maybe Alana could give a quick update on it and see what my colleagues think. But
and I don't really have an update.
Or just your interpretation that you shared with
right.
me that day.
Well, I do interpret the, and I still haven't seen the complaint. He hasn't sent it to me yet. I do interpret it, though, if the judge determines that Enderlin had no authority, constitutional authority, then it's very likely that the state doesn't because Enderlin's authority comes from the state. So that's my first thought, was that initial thought that depending how that constitutional argument comes out, it probably affects state authority one way or the other. That's why I wanted to read the complaint and the response and the ordinance. I did ask for that. The city attorney said he would send it, but he hasn't sent it yet. So I don't have any further information than what I sent you in email the other day, which was just our statutory authority. Our authority over the 10 minutes does not extend to cities which have passed an ordinance. So because Enderlin has an ordinance, assuming it's what I think it is, then we don't take jurisdiction over that. That's right in the statute, but the jurisdictions are similar. And that's as much as I know. I will follow up to see if he could send that paperwork fairly soon.
What's the process if we want to, quote, unquote, intervene in this? There must be a time frame on it.
Well, I think that sort of depends on how it goes. Obviously, the complaint has been filed, but their time to answer hasn't run yet. Okay. So, and we don't know today necessarily without researching it and reading the filing whether we would be intervening as the respondent, okay? So it would be similar to when we intervened in federal court on the reclamation case. There's a little bit of figuring out there that we don't have enough information today to figure out. But there are other ways of possibly, like if someone makes a motion to dismiss or a motion for summary judgment, you might do an amicus brief or something like that where you don't have to actually intervene, but you might want to submit your information that you think is relevant to the court. And so I have to see that paperwork first, and I will follow up on that, and then I'll talk about it with the litigation people in the AG's office.
I guess what I wanted to verify or confirm with my colleagues today is that I thought that it'd be a very good idea for us to weigh in on this thing. And so I wanted to get your two thoughts on it. And I know it's Julie, it's Rails, your portfolio, but I figured it's fair to get the discussion out early.
I can't say whether we should weigh in or not until I see what the complaint is and see, you know, the facts of the case. I have a couple thoughts. I don't have any problem with Enderlin developing their own ordinance. I think that's great that communities are taking matters into their own hands and developing rules or regulations that they think are appropriate for their community. And if that supersedes our authority, I'm okay with that. The reality is this case might tell us if any of us have authority over the railroads on this crossing issue, and that also will be helpful to know. So I'm looking forward to that, but I would just initially, I'm frustrated with the railroads and all the block crossing problems that we're having across the state. So if we can weigh in on behalf of this case and make that case, help Enderlin make that case, then I'm all in favor of that. But I need to know more about the actual complaint and what the legal issue is here and how we can best strategically get to the end, which is urging the railroads to take care of these block crossings.
Okay. Commissioner Christman, do you have any thoughts?
Well, I guess I'll maybe just split a couple of what I think I understood what's already been said. In this particular case with Enderlin and their frustration about crossings being blocked, I mean, no doubt I agree with them with their frustration and desire to have that stop happening. I'm not sure I agree with every community being able to develop completely their own standards for speed and things like that. There's probably got to be some limits, or, you know, you could have one village completely shut down train traffic, and so we can't go too far with it.
No,
but certainly
crossings.
In the case of blocked crossings, yeah, this is what the railroads are doing in some of these little towns is just getting out of hand, I think. So bottom line is, I think that your main points that each of you made, we got to get the complaint and evaluate it, but I certainly think it is something that we potentially need to participate in or weigh in on.
Okay. All righty. So, Alana, can you put this for our next meeting, give us an update on it, and if you get anything in the interim?
Yes.
And then, okay.
I
think that's fair enough.
Can I just make one comment about block crossings? And just, I think it's good information to know that there are two concepts here that we're dealing with. One is where the train is actually blocking the crossing itself. But the other issue that we're having is that we're having blocked crossings based on disruption of the crossing and not having the people come back and repair those crossings so they're crossable. And so you have two issues, commissioners, that I think we need to be cognizant of when we start looking at the future and how we're going to respond to that. But one, again, has to do with the trains themselves coming in and blocking the crossing because of movement of the trains themselves, and the other because they haven't repaired the crossings once they've been disrupted after they add additional track, whatever they might be doing. And there's a long delay in some of those, which is also creating an enormous amount of frustration for farmers, people that live in these communities as well. So just a note on that.
Okay.
A couple more thoughts on this whole issue. There's been some out there who are suggesting that the PSC isn't doing anything on this, and that's totally wrong. We are. Daryl and I have been working on 10 or so different issues, just like he said, either a block crossing or a crossing that's out, trying to work with the railroad to rectify those issues, and in several cases have had great success. And the roads have responded and fixed the crossings, and traffic has resumed quite effectively. So I think that... you know, in the case of Enderlin, they took matters into their own hand. Every community also has the option of turning to us, and we will get involved on these issues and like I just said, have been and will continue to do so. So I hope that communities will reach out to us when they're having challenges so we can be aware of them and work on their behalf. Secondly, one of the issues that has come up in the last couple of weeks is Karlsruhe. It's a very specific community that's having some extensive block crossings, like up to an hour where traffic can't get across. And Daryl and I are working on that issue with Alana, but we might be coming forward with some more formal action on that particular issue, working with the railroads to either come in for an informal hearing so all the parties can be on the participating and try to get to the bottom of a solution for that, or a more formal inquiry into what's going on that issue so that can get resolved. But I just wanted to update you guys on that one because there might be some more action coming forward on that in the next at our next meeting.
Okay, anything that you wanted to add to discussion, Randy or Julie, that we haven't put on there today? Dave, do you have any questions? I think you came
by. Oh, I do have one thing. Sorry. The budget testimony is going to be hitting us quickly here after the holidays, and I recall this from last year being kind of a crunch at the beginning of the session trying to pull this all together. My understanding is if I'm elected and am serving here, I'll be moving into the chairman's spot and I'll be presenting the budget testimony.
Maybe.
So, well, it a few ifs in place there, a couple of them big. But I would like to get Josh working on some of the budget testimony and just looking at it and getting prepared and getting some of the records updated and that sort of thing. So I just wanted to let you guys know I was going to ask him to start doing
Sounds
that.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Dave, did you have any questions about the railroad particularly?
Karlsruhe, which railroad serves Karlsruhe?
BNSF.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, both railroads. Yep, and we could give you a copy of the letters we've sent them, kind of outlining the various communities we've heard from and asking for a report back from them on what's going on and how they're dealing with those. So there's probably 10 for BNSF and 4 or 5 for CP.
I would say that. But the worry about the CP rail in Enderlin is if the judge finds it's unconstitutional, your authority is probably open.
Absolutely. That was when I first read through that, went right to our legal attorney, because that's the concern I have. All the other stuff is very good. But if this, I think, puts the state law in jeopardy. And so that's why I think personally we have to tie into this somehow.
But this doesn't – I mean, it just clarifies whether it is or isn't, right? I mean, it doesn't – them filing this didn't you know, put the law in jeopardy. It's just that now the law will be tested.
Well, it's the same. Well,
fine.
How you look at it, I guess.
When you get it.
I mean, somebody else could have tested it too, and if we had taken
Yeah, somebody could have the last 100 years.
Right.
I understand. But if there is a decision that says that that constitutionally this is preempted. It's hard for me to imagine, and there might be a rationale, how municipal would be preempted and not state, but it's more likely, I think, that the state would also be preempted. So then you have precedent, and you can't just continue to violate it.
But that's the second and third and fourth order effects of what I thought of is, we'll have to see how this way plays out. But the PSC, I think, absolutely has to watch this very closely. And if a judge comes out and he affirms that the law in place is good and valid, then great. If the judge comes out and there's a tweak to it, I think we immediately get a bill together to tweak the law to then keep that authority through a different venue. So it's not – so there's a sequence of events that's going to take place. I think we have to be watching it very, very closely.
And so the matter right now is you're waiting for documentation from Enderlin. And have you asked CP too?
No, I only asked Enderlin, and I'll probably go to the federal site and see if I can get it directly because he didn't. He said he'd
I wanted to talk to my colleagues about it too today and see where we were all at. And I know Julie and Daryl have worked hard on other issues. And Dave, I could throw out there too that, you know, there are issues with both the BNSF and the CP. But I'll say that the CP has been the one that's given me the most challenges. When you reach out to the BNSF, they've been very forthcoming with their information. They tend to answer our phone calls. The CP, it's a whole different animal right now. And so it's I don't want to put them both in the same bucket. There's issues with both of them, but the CP has been less responsive to anything I've ever asked of them. So. Okay, anything else for discussion? Going once, going twice? Okay, let's go right to scheduling then. I gave Daryl a whole bunch of dates I thought that would work for the meetings between now and July and around NARUC and everything else. So, Daryl, do you just want to go through those?
We are scheduled through December, so I just want you to know that. So we're looking at trying to schedule for January, February, March, April, May, June, and July. January, we're looking at January 7th and the 21st.
That's fine around Mark and the Grainmans.
And those are Wednesdays, so those are on a regular schedule. Any issues with that?
I do not.
The 7th and the 21st.
7th and the 21st, Wednesdays.
Very good.
Okay.
Then we have February.
No, Alana left. I was trying to think fast, and of course that didn't work. With our rules changes, there was some step in that that was potentially requiring action from us in late January. And so I'm fine with the 7th and 21st for our regular meetings, but as long as we're this far out, could we also save that 28th date if nobody has it booked up, just in case we need it?
I will be gone on that date.
Okay.
I would say, Randy, though, a special meeting for the rules package is usually what we would do, something like that. So I don't think that would be a problem.
We'll just squeeze it in if we have to.
I think so, yeah.
Hopefully everything that we need to do will be done by the 25th or the 21st. And
okay.
Okay.
All right, Daryl, what do you got?
Continue on February 11th. And 25th, again, on our regular Wednesdays.
I tried to back bracket it around NARUC and some other stuff that first week of February. Okay.
11 and 25th?
11th and 25th of February.
Okay.
Looks good.
All right, then we go into March. We would look at March 11th and 25th, again, on our regular Wednesdays.
Good.
Yep.
Okay.
Randy, that good for you?
Yes.
Okay.
And then April, we're looking at the 8th and the 29th. We've kind of got a 2 weeks there between, which is usually, you know.
I had to spread them apart. There's a summit for some stuff I'm involved in, the 19th to the 23rd.
April 8th and the 29th.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. May, we're looking at the 13th and the 27th.
Yep. should work.
Okay, then we only have one date in June, and that's the 17th.
And that one I picked just because we're the third is right after the other meeting, and then we got Mark the 7th to the 10th. And after that, who knows what'll happen in July.
Okay.
That worked, Brent? 17th?
Two thoughts, and I'm flipping back some. February 25th could be potentially the very end of the first half of the legislative session, and like when they're taking up all the budgets and stuff right before the end. So do we want to have our day tied up, or do we want to at least call down there and check when crossover day is? More importantly, I wonder if January 7th is potentially the day for swearing in state officials.
I seem to recall
a little late, doesn't it? With the first being the week before, seems like they'd do that on when right after the new year.
I know that's all set down there, and I don't know why I didn't think of ever looking ahead. But you know, they're not going to be able to get started on Thursday and Friday, so they're going to come in usually not on a Monday. You know, to let people move down on a weekday, they'll probably start up like the 6th and. I don't know if they've scheduled what day the swearing in is going to be, but
check.
I can do that.
But we could approve these and just put this on the agenda again to double check to see if the legislative calendar conflicts with something and address it on November 6th.
All right, so I'll check into the swearing in ceremonies and crossover.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I just while we're talking on the issue, our last meeting for this year is December 17th. We could certainly have a meeting, you know, the 30th or 31st, depending what everybody's travel plans are. So that would almost even get rid of that meeting for the 7th. But I didn't know if we kind of have gone doing that last meeting in the middle part of December. But I don't know if you guys are going to be around that last week of December at all.
Depends on if we want to do our resolutions. I'll be around.
I'm just saying we don't have a meeting scheduled after December 17th. Oh. We've kept that open for the holidays for staff and ourselves, quite honestly. But we could certainly do a meeting December 29th, 30th, or even the 31st, and that would negate the meeting for a meeting on the 7th, probably. So I just throw that out there.
That works for me.
I don't want to schedule that now. And
that's fine. I just decide. Okay, so you got all those, Daryl?
All right, then June 17th and July 1st. Okay.
Oh, I didn't know we went to July.
June 17th.
June 17th was good.
Yeah.
Okay. And then July 1st.
Daryl.
That's as far as we've scheduled, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine with me.
I think what I was thinking in July, quite honestly, Daryl, is that you got Nehruk the middle part of July. So if we're going to do July, maybe we'd do 8 and 22 or just leave it until we get closer in June.
Yeah, I agree with you on 8 and 22.
8 and 22, maybe we could just do that. Does that work for you, Randy, 8 and 22 for July? That way we don't encumber the fourth week and we're wrapped around Nehruk.
We can. The 8th is going to be the last day of the NDATC meeting, I imagine.
Oh, sure.
Everybody wants to be at that. But Tuesday, you know.
Usually starts on Monday, doesn't it?
Well, their own meeting's on Monday, and then a big part of the meeting is Tuesday, and then they wrap it up Wednesday mornings.
Yeah.
How about the afternoon, July 8th, and the morning of July 22nd, and then we're scheduled.
Sure.
And no informal on the 8th. How's that, Randy?
I think that sounds very good.
Okay. Afternoon of the 8th and then the 22nd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And no informal on the 8th. Okay, so next slide. Esther, Pedigree Technologies, try it again.
Try again.
Yeah. What do we got now?
They had a presentation in Fargo this morning, so they couldn't be here this afternoon.
Sure. Okay, what do you have for new ones?
They didn't give any dates. They just said, give us a date and we'll make sure it works this time.
Did they say who is so much more important than us?
The college.
Julie, I'll let you throw out the dates since I know that you're kind of setting this up.
have the first week of December, like the first or second.
And telephone stuff, right, Randy?
That, ironically, is the other statewide meeting, but that one is in Bismarck, so,
yeah,
you know, with a little time flexibility, it's not like there's a travel situation.
No, Julie, why don't you just pick a date that works
for you?
How
about the first? The first?
Oh, see, once. If we're going to do one of those, probably should be the first. That's when the legislative organization, but I suppose we really don't have much to do with that, do we?
No, they
present anything there. Or
try to avoid the legislature as much as we can.
I don't.
Is the budget talk that day, the first? Or is it the next week?
Oh, sure.
The 8th. I think pre-session is the 8th.
I don't know.
Well, let's set it for the can somebody check on, because those dates are set too. Let's set it for the afternoon of like 1:30 on the 1st.
That's fine.
And then double check when pre-session is in the budget address, because that's usually one to...
What's their time request? Are they looking at...
It's an hour.
An hour. So, any specific time at all, or just...
1:30.
Okay, and then the next one, I added a couple things here. Rescheduling a staff planning meeting. Randy and Julie, we had a meeting at 9 o'clock on Friday that all of a sudden got encumbered that day. So I don't know if we want to try to go next week. I'm pretty open the 27th and 28th. I don't know what your schedules are.
Do we have an XL Energy meeting on the 8:30? Oh, I do. Yeah,
I don't.
See here. I could do 10:30 on the 28th.
Randy, does that work for you?
Yeah.
This is October?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that would work. Till 11:30, then I get out. Perfect.
10:30 to 11:30.
Okay, and so we can reschedule that one for Friday.
Was NSP coming in on some day?
They're trying to come in before Thanksgiving.
I just approved a day for that,
November
13th, but it's not on here yet.
November 13th.
I'm still holding out on that one, so.
Okay, yeah, the 13th sounds right. Okay, actually, so yeah, I'm fine on the 28th.
I'm sorry. Could we do the 27th, the morning of the 27th?
No, nope, I can't.
No? No time the 27th?
Very late in the day.
That's fine. I'm fine late in the day, Julie.
No, I'm trying to get at least.
Well, let's look at the 30th then. I'm open all of the 30th except for 10 o'clock.
Yeah, maybe 9, 8:30 on the 30th.
That's fine. Ready?
Yep.
Okay.
Let's do that.
8:30 or 9, Julie?
Let's do 8:30.
Okay, 8:30 and 30. And that's just for the three of us, Daryl, just so you know.
Staff, this is a staff planning meeting, so it's defined.
Yeah, but just the three of us. We don't need the division heads in there or anything.
So it's 8:30 on the 30th.
All right.
Okay, and then here's what I'd recommend for these FTE discussion. The pedigree meeting was canceled for this afternoon. Maybe we could drop it in that same time frame. That way we get Josh, we'll want a decision today, I think, is what it comes down to. If we don't make a decision today, we've made a decision, that means it won't be in the budget.
Well, not necessarily.
But does that work for you guys this afternoon at...
She was at 1:30 and you guys haven't worked informal now, so...
Right, but could we do it afterwards? At 2:30?
Sure.
Randy, does that work for you?
I have somebody coming in at 2:45, but I think I could probably get that altered.
Or we can go afterwards, I guess.
Yeah.
I can't do afterwards. I have a 3:45.
Okay. Your call, Andy.
Well, I had already promised that I would be there available at 2:45.
Okay. Well, let's do this. Let's meet at 2:30.
And that was basically to miss the pedigree meeting.
Yeah.
Well, can we come back a little early?
Oh, that's
1:15 or
that's a great idea. I'm okay with that.
Do it before the informal?
That's Great idea. Randy, you okay with that?
Yep.
Perfect. Brilliant idea, Joel.
1:15 today.
Or do you want one?
Just 1 o'clock, if that's okay with
1 o'clock.
And we got a half hour before the next one. Okay, and then we go back to the wind hearing business. Okay, so it'd be 2 different hearings, right, Jerry?
Yeah, we would need...
Maricourt would be back in Ashley, I presume. And the, I forget what Sunflower was, that was just in Hettinger, wasn't it? No, Hebron.
I forget where it was, but it was Salem or somewhere.
Okay.
Okay. No, it was in Hebron.
That was the Hebron one, right? Yeah. Okay, so if we'd have a special meeting, if we have November 6th, when's the notice period? We always go through that.
Give us about maybe after the 10th of December. What is that? What's the
10th? It's a Wednesday.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you that I'm open December 12th. 15 and 16 and 19. Let's see where my colleagues are at for those.
I'll be gone on the 12th.
Okay.
Did you say the 16?
I said 15, 16, 19, and quite honestly, 22.
I'm available on the 16.
Okay.
Me too.
Okay, so we'll set aside December 16th for one of them.
19 doesn't look good. 22nd does is fine.
Randy, how does the 22nd look for you?
Good.
Okay, so Jerry, can you keep those 2 dates and Esther block those off?
I got 16, 22.
Doesn't matter what you decide, which goes where.
Sure. Is it possible to give me a third one?
The 15 would work too.
The 15th, mm-hmm. December, didn't I say 15?
Yeah.
15, 16, you said.
Oh, okay.
I hadn't said 15.
Oh, okay. Randy, 15? Yep. Okay, so December 15. So let's kind of leave this.
16 and 22.
Okay.
Just to summarize what I think we talked about before. So we've got those dates. You're going to talk to the companies. Randy, you're going to review the stuff that you want to. And Julie, you'll quite honestly do the same, I think, right? And so if you come to conclusion before our next meeting, let Jerry know, and maybe we'll do a special meeting, depending which way we got to go. And the informals, we could schedule those times, too.
We can put them into the notice.
I mean, get it all ready to go, but use those dates for the informals is what I'm getting at. Those dates, the 15, 16, and 22, either we'll be doing hearings, or let's do the informals and get those done the same way. That way we can get to a decision quickly on that.
I will draft. Well, first of all, we'll see if we decide before the 6th to go one way or the other. And if we do, then I'll only have to draft
right. One
way.
Yeah.
And otherwise, I'll have a draft going either way.
I think we'll decide before the 6th. The question is how much before the 6th. If it's the 5th at 16:30, or that's military time. Okay.
Well, I would expect for me, though, I don't expect it to be the 5th, but I don't expect it to be this week either. We got a busy afternoon now, and tomorrow we're out at another hearing all day, so it's not going to be in the next 24 hours either.
What I was thinking was we could maybe look at the maps and stuff and the case, and you can ask me for...
I think that's a good meeting. That the same discussion you and I had, Jerry, about this, I think if you had a similar discussion with Commissioner Christman and Commissioner Fedorchuk, then I think I'd be able to make a much more informed decision. Okay. Okay, is there anything else that we needed to schedule that I missed? Julie, Randy?
Okay.
All right.
Just a question about tomorrow. I know two of you are driving yourself. Is that right? I was told that because of traffic and whatever, that we may have to leave a little earlier than 7:30. Is that going to be a problem? We might have to leave at 7:15 because apparently the traffic up to Beulah gets pretty heavy in the morning. Besides, it takes a little longer, too. That's what the lady at the... should take about an hour and a half, they're saying now, rather than an hour and 15 minutes. So.
Yeah, so someone sent an email and said something about an hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying you would have to really speed.
Yeah, and the lady at the chamber also said an hour and 20 minutes to an hour and a half it takes now to get up to Beulah. So if we left at 7:30 sharp, we could do it. We'd have to leave at 7:15, okay? All right. Then I'll send out an email. And I know Jerry doesn't like get up early, but we'll have to do that.
Okay.
All right, so 7:15. I'm sorry I had to say
that. It's all good discussion, Darrell. All right, we'll close the administrative portion of our meeting and come back in 66 minutes.